Doug Brown joining Brendan today on our edition of Unusual Sources on CFMU 93.3 FM, McMaster University Radio. Well, we're going to begin today's show looking at the situation in Gaza. And of course, you know, the situation throughout Palestine and the occupied territories has been pretty grim, but particularly grim in Gaza, which has been described as the world's largest outdoor prison. And there's a continuing blockade, a shortage of materials and food and medicines and all sorts of things in Gaza. So last fall, a Swedish boat, the Estelle, which is actually a sailboat, with an international crew, attempted to reach Gaza with humanitarian aid. And unfortunately, they were seized in international waters and were unable to get to Gaza. Instead, the crew was taken basically to prison in Israel. They were released shortly thereafter. And although it was portrayed as a somewhat genteel seizure, more recently film has come out that the Israeli military really used some violence on the crew, although the crew was 100% nonviolent. Now, there was one Canadian on board that ship, and that was former Member of Parliament Jim Manley. And we have Jim on the show today via the telephone. He's in Nanaimo, where he lives, and we're very pleased to have Jim on board. Jim, are you there?
I'm here, and I'm very pleased to be on board with the CFMU, just as I was pleased to be on board the Estelle.
Well, we're very glad to have you, Jim. And first of all, you know, you've been out on the West Coast, and we're in Eastern Canada. Could you tell us a little bit about, first of all, about your own background and then how you got interested in this issue?
Well, I'm a United Church minister, and I guess you could say that I'm kind of in the liberal wing of the United Church. And Eva and myself, we've been married for 54 years now, and we spent the first 4 years of our life in Kitimat Indian Village with the Haisla people. And we've had a continuing concern with First Nations people in Canada, you know, since then. We've also been very involved with people in Central America and South America. And in the last few years, our attention has become increasingly focused on the situation in Israel and Palestine, and the situation of Palestinians. And we were slow in waking up to this situation, just the same as a lot of Canadians are. But it helped when there were some books that we read and some speakers that we heard, like Jeff Helper and Amira Haas and others, that showed us the situation. And most of the early people that we heard speaking, and the early books that we read were by Jewish people living in Jewish Israelis, and they had become very concerned about their own country's treatment of Palestinians, and that woke us up.
Well, okay, and then consequently, you became involved in the boat to Gaza, so. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about the boat and your local organization and how you got to be actually a part of this international crew.
Well, I'd supported the earlier flotillas, you know, the Mavi Marmara, very shocked and upset when it was attacked by Israeli defense forces. And then when we tried to send the Canadian boat, the Tahrir, in 2011, and in 2012, we heard a speaker, Jace Tanner, and another, Brian Campbell, and at the end of it, Jace Tanner simply asked me if I'd be willing to go as the Canadian representative on the Estelle. And Ideally, it would have been better if there could have been a sitting member of Parliament, but Parliament had just resumed sitting, and actually there weren't any parliamentarians that were particularly keen on the venture. So I was glad to be given that opportunity. Eva and I had discussed it after I was asked, and she encouraged me to go. And it was a great privilege, actually, to be able to represent the many Canadians who are concerned about this issue. The Estelle, as you say, is a 53-foot sailing vessel. It flew the Finnish flag until the Israelis captured it and took it down, and instead of raising the skull and crossbones, they raised the Star of David, which always strikes me as being a great insult to the Israeli flag. But the crew was about 30 people, and the basic crew was Swedish, Finnish, and Norwegian, but then it had people from Spain, Italy, Greece, and myself. And it had come down from Sweden and Finland and had made several stops in France and Spain and northern Italy, where there were large and enthusiastic crowds that came out to welcome it and send it on its way. And then I joined it in Naples. And the hope was that because it was a sailing vessel, because we were totally committed to nonviolence, that Israeli government would not see it as being any threat to their security. But in fact, they were more afraid of the Estelle than the English were of the Spanish Armada.
Well, and the crew, I understand there were several other MPs on board.
Yes, there were five sitting members of Parliament, one from Norway, one from Sweden, one from Spain, and two from Greece. And myself, there were two journalists, there was an engineer, there was a professor of comparative religions from Uppsala University, and, you know, a wide variety of people from different occupations, all committed to nonviolence.
And yeah, obviously a dangerous lot. Jim, could you tell us about what happened on the day of the seizure?
Okay, just one more addition about people who were on, and this was very important. There were three former members of the Israeli Defense Forces on the boat with us. And they were very important as a boost to our morale. But on the Saturday morning, after we'd been cruising for 2 weeks and we were within about 10 nautical miles of the offshore waters of Gaza, we were approached by Israeli gunboats, and we had taken training in nonviolent resistance. We did what we could to prevent them from coming on board, but we were surrounded. I don't have the exact number of boats that there were. I think there were about eight, but some people have said that there were more like 12. So it was rather a confused situation. There was also a helicopter and a ship with a water cannon on it. And they boarded the vessel. We resisted as much as we could. There were 11 people who were tasered. Most of these were people who were guarding the one side of the wheelhouse. You know, some of them were tasered, and then I'd see them being dragged on their backs over to the ladder and taken down to the forward deck. And once the wheelhouse was taken over, had decided in advance, you know, once the wheelhouse was taken over, there'd be no further resistance. And so at that point, we were all escorted down to the main deck and later taken on the back deck. The people in the pilot house had cut the engines and the sails were down. And the Israelis didn't know how to start the engine, and they didn't know how to put up the sails, so we had to be towed into the port of Ashdod, and it meant that we didn't get in there until about 10:30. And then there was extensive and long interrogations, and I found this the most difficult part of the whole venture. Although my interrogation was comparatively mild, you know, in comparison with what you read about for a lot of other people. But I found that difficult. And then we were taken to the Givon Detention Center, which is close to Ashdod, kind of on the way to Tel Aviv. And we spent just under 3 days there. And conditions in the detention center were not bad. We were allowed to get out during our meals. We could talk with each other and so on. So that's really not the story. You know, we were deported afterwards and we were all shipped home. So that's not really the important part of the story. The important part of the story is what has happened to the people of Gaza and what's still happening and how they still have a need to have access to the outside world.
Yes, I think that's probably, as you say, the most important aspect, and we're not getting that through our corporate media. I just noticed, you know, I went on the computer today and found out about you know, some fishers from Gaza, because they, you know, they have a Mediterranean coast, and they certainly are lacking in food and resources. They were shot at and forced back to shore by the Israeli military. So it's very much a daily ordeal they're going through.
That's right. There's a 40% of the people in Gaza are food insecure, and another 19% are threatened with food insecurity. And one of the most serious things, you get a lot of this information in a report called Gaza in 2020, which is produced by a United Nations committee, and it examines the conditions that there are in Gaza today and predicts, on the basis of studies, what things will be like by 2020, and one of the most serious issues is the whole question of water. Only 10% of the aquifer is drinkable at the present time, and by the year 2016, and that's only 3 years away, the aquifer is going to be unusable, and if nothing is done by the year 2020, it will take centuries to restore, because there's so much pollution from sewage and from salinization, and the sewage lagoons were deliberately bombed during Operation Cast Lead. Water desalination plants have not been built, and so the people face a serious threat in terms of water, and more people in our world are realizing how important water is, and I think Gaza is right in the front line of that.
Another aspect you had mentioned in your introduction too was that Canada, at least the government, doesn't seem much interested, nor the parliamentarians. And you were a parliamentarian. What would it take to get our political system to respond to this humanitarian crisis?
Well, there's an old slogan that says, when the people lead, the leaders will follow. And I think that there has to be kind of a general pressure put on by ordinary people. I'm a New Democrat, and we could not get New Democrats who would speak out publicly on this issue. And some who had done so previously were ostracized. There was one liberal three or four years ago, you know, who spoke out, and he was defeated in the last election by one of the robocall elections. And I understand that there's been a Bloc Québécois member recently who's spoken out. But it's something that we seem to be afraid of being called anti-Semitic. And I think we need to emphasize that criticizing Israel is not anti-Semitic any more than criticizing the Canadian government is un-Canadian or criticizing the American government is anti-American. Governments need to face honest criticism when they do wrong. And the Israeli government has been acting in an inhumane and illegal way with respect to the Palestinian people since at least 1967.
Yes, and your own background as a United Church minister, I remember because, I grew up in a United Church family that the United Church actually was one of the first organizations in Canada to recognize the plight of the Palestinian people.
Well, that's true. But, Al Forrest, who is the editor of the United Church Observer, did not get a lot of support from rank-and-file United Church people. And I have to admit that I was one of the ones that didn't pay a lot of attention to some of the articles he wrote in the United Church Observer. He was a voice crying in the wilderness. And we need a lot more voices that are prepared to speak up at the present time.
Well, that's for sure. And, Jim, thank you so much for giving your description of both your experience on the Estelle and the situation in Gaza. And, thanks for all your good work in that area.
Well, and thank you to you and to CFMU. I think the voice of students is really important in this issue. And, the kind of people who listen to alternate radio and subscribe to alternate media, we have to get the message out. So thank you so much for the interview.
Well, and thank you, Jim. That was Jim Manley speaking to us from Nanaimo, B.C. Jim was a former member of Parliament and was on the crew of the Estelle, a relief vessel that was seized by the Israeli Defense Forces last fall while trying to deliver aid to Gaza.